It's Mail It In Friday, brought to you by Old Tomorrow Craft Beer.
I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Yeah, it's Mail It In Friday.
I just stare at my desk, but it looks like I'm working.
So what?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Going through Twitter and Instagram, and apparently these dudes, like dudes are starting to wear onesies, like rompers.
Rompers. I've noticed this. Like, what is going on?
So my cousin, he's a fashion-forward dude. Like, he lives in New York City, and I text him. I said, let me guess. You already have a romper, like a onesie. He goes, yes, I started the company. Do you want one?
Please wear a romper in here. Please.
I wrote back, yeah, man, of course I want one. Like, just because I thought it was his company, right? He calls me, he goes, do you really think that I started the rompers? And I was like, yeah, you're right, man. Those things are stupid. I don't want one anyway.
But does he have one, though? Like, was he goofing on you? But at the same time, he's wearing one right now in New York.
I do not think he has one.
I thought those were only for kids, like babies.
Dude, what are you...
My daughter has like four or five of them.
What are you doing? I don't know what you're doing with that.
Well, that's a great question. Is it a... You have to gear down...
You got to take... I don't know how you do it. Steph, how do you do that when you got a romper like that?
Yeah, I don't know how that works. Like, because I don't know, do women wear them? I guess women, like, do grown adults wear rompers? I thought it was, not even playing ignorant here.
Hey,
dude, grown women wear rompers.
They're very, very in for women for the past two seasons. And it is a pain because you literally have to get naked to go to the washroom. For men, though, the men's ones, they're buttoned up.
But that doesn't make it any easier.
No, it's still, like, I don't know how you guys would do it in a hurry, like, unless you just move the pant to the side.
But why would any guy do this, though? I don't understand why you would want to dress like a woman.
Cam Newton did it. Cam Newton had a romper on, a Coachella, whatever it was.
Well, I do find that athletes, like, that's a big part of what is going on in the sports world right now. Like, they're all fashion forward. Cam Newton's one of those guys.
Cam Newton's off the deep end, though. Like, I like kind of fashion. Like, I like seeing guys with, you know, P.K. Subban wears a hat once in a while, but Cam Newton's gone too far. Like, I just think he looks like an idiot.
Yeah, it's, like, that's become his thing to see how far he can push it. I feel like maybe he's trolling people. Like, he's almost laughing. Like, wait, I'm going to wear this, and they're going to take
Westbrook's
me seriously.
The same thing. I think he's
Westbrook,
just, it's just ridiculous.
There's a bunch of different guys. Like, we had Nick Stauskas in here a few weeks ago. He said he bought a fur coat to walk around, and he said he spent... like $5,000-$10,000 on a pair of shoes, I believe.
What's the update outside there? What's going on out there?
Well, shout out to our friends at 2-for-1 Pizza. We got future headlines coming up at 6:30, brought to you by 2-for-1 Pizza. So they were really cool. They sent us a bunch of food. They sent us wings. They sent us pizzas, basically saying, hey, shout out to the boys leading into the long weekend. We wanted to let you know we're thinking of you. Thanks for coming in and putting in time.
I know, but what's Levine doing out there?
I haven't spotted him in the past 30 seconds, but the last time I saw him, he had his face stuffed with a pizza.
I already know his move. He wants to steal three pizzas and take them home.
I walked in. I wasn't paying attention to how much was out there. Did you get a read on how many boxes were out there? We should have been calculating this beforehand. Because I'll bet you we go out there and at least two are gone.
For sure.
At least two are gone.
He's going home with two boxes of pizza. Men.
That's his move. He did that a couple of weeks ago when we had other food in. Guy comes in. He goes, mind if I grab some? And we're like, go ahead, man. Go ahead. Do your thing. And then he says on the way out, because you were like, wait a minute. You're going to take like four pieces of chicken and all this other stuff. And he goes, well, for lunch tomorrow. Oh, really?
What about our lunch tomorrow?
Yeah, how about the other people that haven't had access to the food yet? This guy takes his meal for that moment, starts stuffing his face, and then decides, I'm just going to pack something aside so that I have lunch for tomorrow. Instead of maybe opening the door to maybe Fergie wanted some chicken.
See, we got different reads on this.
You know?
All four of those pieces of chicken and all the pizza and everything, I think it's gone before the 400 or the 401.
Oh, you think he's eating that in the car?
I think he gets medieval on that right in the car, right away.
Eating in the car, man.
I'll tell you what, it's a dangerous game.
It's the most dangerous game you can play.
Yeah.
You try to eat a chicken parm sandwich driving 120, you're toast. You are toast. You know how many times I've done that? Like back in the day when I was really, really packing on calories.
I'll tell you what, I got a Range Rover and there is a perfect little pocket where the gear shifter is where a little thing of nug sauce fits in perfectly.
Almost like it was built for you. It's like a custom ride.
Yeah, I just go nug to the sauce, like seamless.
Saucing up nuggets on the road, man. I'm not sure I've heard of that move before. That's aggressive, but I'll give you credit. That's why you have the C on your jersey.
You've never sauced up a nug on the road?
I don't think I have. I don't think. How do you drive?
You're not the man I thought you were.
How do you drive holding?
I just told you. You got to honestly keep it together, but you got to, as soon as you leave the drive thru, you take the top off the nug sauce, then it goes in its little nook. So then it's just seamless. You don't even have to look. You just go into the nook and back. Back to the yap.
Well,
into the nug sauce. Back to the yap.
I give you full credit, man. I don't think that's very easy to pull off, but if you can pull it off, you're the man.
See if he's. I want to see if he's still eating that stuff.
Yeah, Steph, get us more updates on what's going on
just,
out there.
Don't even go out there. Just look.
I'll bet you he's out there.
Is he still there?
No, he left. Okay, go investigate how much food is left.
No, I'm going to go look right now.
All right, go do a lap and let us know because I'm guessing half the food is left. Courtesy of 2-for-1 Pizza.
I do know that there was 6 boxes of pizza and about 5 boxes of wings.
All right. Well,
I see that most of the boxes have been opened.
Oh, so they're perusing, in other words.
Yes.
Like looking for a specific type of pizza, and I'm willing to open up every single one.
So I'm not confident in how much is left for our crew.
All right. How's it looking out there? The O-Dog is back. The investigation is over.
From what I gather from Scotty, he didn't take a pie, but basically did because he ate one.
Well, that's the thing. When I was looking out, he was eating slice after slice, and everything was a fresh new slice. Every time I looked out, somehow there hadn't been any bites in that slice. So now it all adds up. Yeah. Now it makes sense. Anyway, I had a bit of a Chip Douglas moment myself actually today because I haven't told you this. I've been keeping this secret. I joined a gym.
Oh, God.
Because the 10K was very motivational. Were you not inspired to maybe start doing more stuff? Like, I was kind of embarrassed, to be honest with you.
Well, what do you think you're setting me up for if you say you were embarrassed and you finished 5 minutes ahead of me?
That you should be equally as embarrassed. Yeah, you should be thinking the same thing I'm thinking.
What I thought was I want to do it next year and I want to run the whole thing.
Okay, well, get after it, man. I'm telling you, because it'll come quick. That's what happened this time. Like, we were joking around 3 months ago. We're like, go ahead, sign us up. We'll be fine. People are tweeting in and emailing in all these different programs we should be on. I didn't even open any of them. A place out by my hood.
Yeah.
Out
in Winnipeg.
I've been working out. I did a leg day today, which is the worst because I have the muscular tone of a newborn in my legs. Like, I really have embarrassing legs. And I have no muscle. I have no strength. And I think I pulled a hammy. Because I went a little bit too hard on squats or whatever I was doing. And I went to get a smoothie afterwards. The place was packed.
What the hell is this, a country club?
And that's basically where I was. And the place is packed in there. And I find myself stretching out my hammy. And I look behind and the lineup is like 10 deep. And I'm at the front waiting for my smoothie with the Chip Douglas hammy stretch. And it was quite an embarrassing moment.
You're awkward enough in public without that nonsense.
I don't need it.
You don't need that.
No, I don't need it. Game 4 tonight, Sens Pens. The big story in terms of what's going to happen on the ice is Matt Murray's going to play, not Marc-Andre Fleury. We'll get to that in a moment. But the bigger story for me is what is being perpetuated by the Ottawa Senators off the ice. And I know you're Mr. Senator now. You're a fan of the team. You're on board because you're Canadian and they're Canadian. You are feeding the beast that is Eugene Melnyk and his ego and what he is seeking out right now.
Hang on a sec. Where are you? What is...
Did you hear that they are putting Canadian flags on the back of their helmets tonight? Big Canadian flags right in the middle of the helmet. And Eugene Melnyk was speaking with the Ottawa Sun, I believe it was, today. And this is what Melnyk had to say, the owner of the Sens. Quote, "As the last Canadian team standing in the Stanley Cup playoffs, we want to show our appreciation to everyone across Canada for their support. It's an honor to have the Canadian flag on our equipment and say thank you." End quote.
I think that's just a distraction. That's not necessary. It's just, I'm not buying that one. I don't like it. I'm not into that. Why not do it at the beginning of the playoffs?
Here's specifically why I'm not into it.
Well, it seems like you're a little bit mocking the other Canadian teams, saying, hey, we're left.
That's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah,
as if you're the only Canadian team to ever get to a conference final.
Yeah.
As if this is the first time in Canadian history. This is a Canadian voyage that we've never been on before.
You know what I would say to him? Mr. Melnyk, have an idea.
Mullen's off today, so I don't know if we can throw it to the Eckersley clip.
Idea.
But we'll find it. Chris,
I mean,
is
have
on.
An idea.
There you go. Chris is, he's on the board. He's doing his thing. I think he's going to get some pizza, some wings. Chris can eat whatever he wants.
He's part of our show.
Absolutely. Steph, whatever she wants.
Yeah.
But, yeah, from one standpoint, Melnyk is mocking the other Canadian teams. But what I also dislike about this whole situation is, now he's claiming, Leaf fans, come aboard. Come into our building. Wear the Canadian flag. Jump on the Sens bandwagon. Yet when Toronto plays in that building, this is the same owner that has gone out of his way to make sure that Leaf fans cannot find tickets to get into that building. So now all of a sudden, he's embracing the fact that Maple Leaf fans are on board with his team, even though they're not. Outside of you, I haven't heard from one Leaf fan that would possibly be rooting for the Ottawa Senators. But now he wants them to support him. Now he wants them to jump on board, give him ratings, give him, I don't know, a boost in ticket sales or merchandise, whatever.
Dude, it's
yet boot them
like
out of the rink and complain when they show up during the regular season. Don't pretend like you're Mr. Canada now.
Act like you've been there.
Act like you've been
God's
there.
For God's sakes.
And this just adds to the forensic investigations, the chirping of Crosby on radio shows. It just, I don't know what is with Eugene Melnyk. I don't know. Like, he's kind of the Jerry Jones of owners
for Canadian
hockey. Or is he the Al
Davis of owners?
Listen, I would be excited, too, if my team was in the conference final and up 2-1. And they've
I
got.
I just told you, though, act like you've been there. You
act like you've been there.
It.
Don't pretend like you're, like every Canadian is actually on board because you're in the conference final. Don't patronize us with the Canadian
player,
flag
I guarantee
stuff.
You every player is like, why are we doing this? This is so stupid.
Right.
Like, really? We got to put a new sticker on our helmet starting tonight in game 4?
In game 4, they're Team Canada.
Really?
Team Canada, courtesy of Eugene Melnyk.
It's a dumb move. It's dumb.
Well, how about Matt Murray going in instead of Marc-Andre Fleury?
You wouldn't have done the same thing?
I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. One, Mike Sullivan, the head coach, clearly has a better history with Murray than he does Fleury. They came up together through the American Hockey League, and he won a Stanley Cup with them a year ago. Murray's been the better goalie this year. But I thought about this earlier today when the news came out. I think there's also another angle to it, and I'm not suggesting that Pittsburgh is thinking about this right now. But I think down the road, Pittsburgh will consider this and realize that this might benefit them in a way. Marc-Andre Fleury is going to be dealt in the summer, as long as he waves. Even though he gave up a bunch of goals in the previous game, no one's blaming him for that. Pittsburgh was abysmal, and Ottawa was on fire.
Yes, in 13 minutes, the Penguins got crushed.
They got crushed, and that was not Fleury's fault. Getting him out now, I still think you get him out of the crease on a high. I think Marc-Andre Fleury has proven that his history in the playoffs, the recent history that has not been very good, I think he got rid of it. I think he proved, I'm all good, man. You're not going to see me like I was against Philly a few years ago where I was giving up 6-7 goals a night against Columbus, I think, a couple years ago, where he was a disaster. I think Marc-Andre Fleury has done enough to prove
he's back.
I've exercised the playoff demons. But maybe he goes in tonight, gives up another four spot. All of a sudden, teams are like, wait a minute, maybe he can't get it together in the playoffs. I think you're getting him out at the perfect time.
I agree.
In terms of the trade value in a month and a half.
You're like a team like the Calgary Flames or the Winnipeg Jets or somebody like that, they're got to be looking at what he's done for that group and saying, that's where we want to get to, and we need a guy to take us there. Maybe he can be the guy. So just get him out. And furthermore, they need Murray's their guy going forward anyway. They were just waiting for an excuse to get him out of there and get him in. And they're all must wins, Brian, but I think Pittsburgh's looking at this saying, we got to change up the look here. We got to do something different, and we got to – and I wouldn't want the Sens to feel any confidence with Fleury and Nett because of what they did in the first period the other night. Because they'd be saying, let's just get her in, get it on him. Who knows what's going to happen? Now they're like, oh, okay, it's this guy. What are we going to do against this guy? As opposed to having that confidence.
Don't you think, though, the focus really should be on 87 tonight?
Yes.
Like,
he was not good.
He hasn't been good for three games.
No.
Oh, he has not done anything. And
he was floating the last game. I was watching him because I watch him every game that I'm at or I'm watching, and I'm like, you're watching the best player in the world, and they have different expectations. But he was just, puck was going one way, he was going the other way, he wasn't looking for the puck. He was in a haze. He looked like he did at the beginning of last season when he was terrible at the start. You remember through Christmas time where it was like, what the hell's wrong with Sidney Crosby? And then he went nuts, and I believe he got himself into the heart conversation.
He did.
Yeah.
He absolutely did.
But that's
did.
What he looked like the other night. He looked like the guy at the beginning of the season. It was disinterested. It was kind of in a haze. And he wasn't anywhere close.
So why doesn't he take more heat? Why doesn't he get the LeBron James treatment? If he's the LeBron James of his own generation, if LeBron played three games the way that Sid has, Stephen A. Smith, Skip Bayless, Colin Cowherd, the American talking heads would be destroying him.
I don't know what else.
Why
I
doesn't Sid get it?
I was on SportsCenter 5 minutes after the game, and I said he was terrible.
I hear you, but I'm saying, like, this conversation, just it never goes there.
Yeah, like, where's the article? What's wrong with Sid?
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't either.
It's been focused on Fleury versus Murray and the boring style of Ottawa or whatever, where this is the best player in the world.
Yeah.
This is a guy who everyone just unanimously accept, best player, has been brutal through three games.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard too much talk about it. And I wonder if it's because, unlike LeBron, unlike Tiger Woods, unlike Tom Brady, the great athletes of the 21st century, Sid doesn't have a chance at being anointed the GOAT, greatest player of all time. Like, when LeBron has off nights, they say that's going to cost you because Jordan didn't do that. When Tiger misses a cut, it's like, well, Nicholas, right? Brady, whatever, goes out in the first round. Montana didn't do it. Like, Sid, I think it honestly is because, in a way, he can't catch Gretzky, so tracking how many cups he gets doesn't matter as much. Doesn't mean as much because he's never going to be able to get to the top of the mantle. So it's like, if he retired today, he's a top 10 player of all time. Unbelievable. I'm not sure he can add to his resume is what I guess what I'm saying here. Like, what can he do over the next 5-7 years that would get him to a point where people say, I got to be honest, I think I might take him over Gretzky or even Lemieux.
But you and I both know that that's not even possible. Like, is he going to go out and score 212 points next year? And then you're like, holy crap. He did what Gretzky did. He got 200 points. That ain't happening.
But Gretzky's got four rings. If he gets to 4 or 5, could that put him in the conversation?
No.
And that's probably because of this sport. Because it's such a team sport. You rely on so many different things. You're not on the field of play all the time. Like, that is a difference, clearly, to be fair to him.
What would a modern-day player have to do? Like, a guy, Sidney Crosby is a perfect example. What would his resume have to look like for you to say, maybe that's better than Gretzky? Because I think Gretzky's points, they're so overwhelming that I don't think if a guy won 5 cups, you could say he's better than Gretzky. No way.
I'm not sure either, but context would have to be applied because it's a different
Gretzky
era.
Gretzky scored 92 goals in one season.
He did. different era, though, right? Like in the 80s,
everyone. I don't care.
I think you have to. I think this is the only way it could happen. I think Gretzky won 6 or 7 Hart trophies in a row.
Eight. No, not eight. He won 8 total, I think.
And a lot in a row. And won 4 cups, I think, in 5 years. I think you kind of have to do that. And realistically, that's not going to happen.
No.
Like, I think it's the hardware. I think it's like, wow, this guy ran off 6, 7 Hart trophy. Like, and that's where you wonder where McDavid can take it. Could McDavid get to a point where he runs off 4 or 5 in a row?
And you would have to think that he's going to do that.
I would feel pretty good about it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you? I mean, I could potentially see in 15 years we're sitting there saying, oh, I remember those years, 18, 19 through 23, 24, where he just won 5 in a row.
I think he actually will do that. There might be one other guy that might pop in there and snatch one out of his hands, though. Any idea who that might be?
Does he live in Toronto or play in Toronto 8, 9 months a year?
He lives in Toronto. He's about 6'4", 230.
Freddie the Goat?
Wrong. You are fake news with Freddie the Goat.
I don't think Matthews is 6'4", though.
Okay, sorry, 6'3".
But like, that's what threw me off. No, I think he's 6'2", like 220. That's why when he said 6'4", I'm like, are you goofing on me and saying that Freddie the Goat is going to steal a heart?
Okay, you know what?
You got me.
That one went way over your head.
There you go.
God, have an idea.
I mean, have an idea.
Someone texting and saying there's a sympathy factor with Sid because of the concussion in the previous round.
Well, then he shouldn't be playing then. I don't have a sympathy. Like, there's no sympathy. You go on the ice. You know my theory. You put your jersey on, you're 100%.
Yep.
So what the hell is a sympathy for? He was honestly out to lunch the last game. Not good.
Lots of pressure on him, Malkin, Phil, to get something going tonight. We'll keep teeing up that game. We'll look back on game 4 between the Ducks and the Preds last night. We got Scott Mitchell going to join us in studio, TSN Blue Jay reporter. We'll look back on what happened last night. Bautista getting beaned, how he handled it. Stroman going deep, and another member hitting the DL, and that means we've got a highly touted prospect coming up tonight, and he's going to make his debut. We'll tell you about that. We'll get Scott Mitchell in studio next. Jays in Baltimore tonight. We'll tee that up. Scott Mitchell, our TSN Jays reporter, will be in studio. And there's a highly touted prospect who's going to make his debut tonight. Anthony Alford will be in the lineup, expected to play in center field. We'll touch on that with Scott in studio in 2 minutes. The Jays picked up a big win last night, a must-need win last night. I don't think it really hurt that the Braves were so focused on retribution and beating Bautista in the first, it threw Julio Teheran right off his game, right off the hop. I mean, the Jays threw 3 on the board before he could flinch. They had 6 on the board before the third inning, before the rain delay. And I think it played out the way we were expecting it. Bautista was going to get hit. Bautista didn't respond. And neither did Stroman. I was kind of expecting he might do something, but my guess would be, based on the sensitivity of the Pilar suspension, the comment, what Bautista had to say after the game about the bat flip and how he sounded somewhat apologetic, that they decided, you know what, let's just focus on the win, and that's what happened last night. Scott Mitchell in here, our TSN Jays reporter. Did that play out the way you expected it to play out last night?
The first part did. I was with you on the second one with Stroman on the mound. I thought there'd be emotions that were maybe, you know, misconstrued at a point. I think that's kind of Stroman's MO in his career. Guys kind of look at him and his emotion on the mound and don't really know how to take it. And I thought that might play a role, but he was he kept it toned, and you know, they got their retribution that they were looking for, I guess, in an odd sort of way, and it was quiet.
He threw a couple inside in the first. Like, I think one was a breaking pitch, so it wasn't like he was really trying to send a message, but he did throw a fastball, like a cut fastball inside. And I'm thinking, is that his way of saying
I'm not going to hit anybody, but...
Right. I'm not going to hit you, but I will send a quick message. Like, I understand what's going on here. You need to understand that I've essentially been told don't do anything, but let's get hopping here. And if you want to crowd the plate, then maybe accidentally on purpose I bean you.
And that's the thing about baseball. It's all about messages and sending them, and you do it in odd sort of ways. And maybe the Braves got that message, but it was smart by Stroman. I mean, they needed that ball game last night. He needed to pitch well to keep that bullpen as fresh as possible heading into the series in Baltimore.
Well,
we talk about in hockey, we talk about what's it going to take for the hitting from behind to stop. And I think we all know what the answer to that is.
Someone gets killed.
That's right.
Or really damaged and goes off the ice.
I think the same about beating a guy in baseball. I know it's part of the game. It's tradition. You send the message, don't embarrass us, don't do that. But what's it going to take for that nonsense to stop? Maybe the same thing. I don't know.
Does that come up, Scott? I mean, does that ever...
That's the thing. Another unwritten rule is don't throw at a guy's head. Does that happen? Yeah. Will it happen? Probably. Someone will get hit, and there'll be some sort of talk about it. But the Braves went about it in the right way. I mean, in the leg, Bautista took it and didn't say a word.
Bautista's in an interesting spot for me because he's one of the most hated guys in the league. But I don't know if he wants to be hated. I can't get a read on Jose Bautista. Like, I would argue it's in his best interest now.
You're saying he's one of those guys that everybody thinks he's a D-bag, but he has no idea why?
I think so.
I kind of
do. I think his reaction to the bat flip is a perfect example. Like, he gets to home plate. By the time he gets to home plate, like 12 seconds later, 15 seconds later, he's apologetic and remorseful and telling Suzuki, like, hey, didn't mean it. Can't wait. Then he ran out to right, starts talking to the ump, and I think he was basically pleading his case. It got ahead of me. I got emotional, whatever, but don't hold it against me. I say just embrace it. Embrace the chaos. Embrace the fact that you're a bad boy or you got attitude or you're hated or whatever, but I can't get a read on him. Like, does he want to be hated? Does he want to be loved? Like, what does Bautista want, in your opinion?
I don't think he cares what people think about him, honestly, and the thing is, I think he has embraced the hate over his career. When you're hitting .190 right now, it's really hard to do that because, you know, nobody hates a guy who's hitting .190. To me, when I watched that replay, I looked at Jose Bautista and the bat flip was personal. It was, I'm finally finding my swing, flip it. And then as he starts jogging, he realizes, oh man, it's an 8-4 game. I shouldn't have done that. That's honestly what I saw.
Well, the first baseman was thinking, like, he was getting lippy with him too, and Bautista stopped, right? Like,
I think that's the point he realized.
I realized what I've done here in terms of the context.
Yeah.
And that, I guess so. But if that's the case, though, then, like, how does he not care? Like, if he doesn't care, then why does he feel obligated to explain himself?
The same guys all the time, they were like, it always comes back to the same guys that are doing stuff like this. And they're like, oh, I didn't really mean it, but.
That's what I'm saying. Just embrace him, man.
Yeah, you did.
That's who you are. You're the bat flipping guy. And he always talks about, and I agree with him, like, it's like a revolutionary move. Like, bat flips should be accepted in the game. Why can't we celebrate? Why can't we be excited? We only get, if we're lucky, 20, 30, 40 a year. If we're lucky. I mean, some guys would sign off on 10 or 15 if they could. And he equated it to celebrating after a big defensive play or a big strikeout. Like, Jason Grilly gets jacked up after every strikeout. He gets out of a jam. That guy's doing cartwheels into the dugout.
He's doing the Ray Bourque fist pump.
Big time. He can't wait. No one calls him on that. And I agree with that. I got no problem with the bat flip. If that's what it's all about, go for it. But I would say stand by it. Like, if you're going to revolutionize this game in a way and say, this is where we're going with it and this is what I'm going to do and I'm going to lead it, don't ever apologize for it. And but I think he's confused by that.
If he was hitting .300, he might agree with you. But, I mean, when you're flipping bats, 8-4 game, whatever the score is, he's hitting a .190.
But you can only bat flip if you're leading or if you're one of the – if you're hitting over .300. I think
you got to be having a good season to be bat flipping, in my opinion.
So you're anti-bat flip.
No,
is that what I'm granting?
Definitely
here?
Not anti-bat flip. I enjoy the theatrics of sports. And I actually have a bigger problem with Marcus Stroman on the mound, what he does. And that's the argument. I mean, are you showing up a pitcher if you bat flip? What if you scream and at the top of your lungs when you strike a guy out?
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's the same thing.
I agree with you. And you get a lot more strikeouts. I mean, Stroman is going to get up over 100 strikeouts. Bautista, the way he's going, he might hit 25 home runs.
Yeah.
So 25 bat flips, 100 screams into the air. Something doesn't add up there.
Yeah,
I mean, the pitchers can get away with.
Is worth if a strikeout is worth a quarter of a bat flip, then you can equate it. We can do the math,
right? Exactly.
Bat flips versus strikeout yells.
Scott Mitchell in studio, our TSN Blue Jay reporter. Could you see a situation where Stroman ever pinch hits when there actually are bodies on the bench to be used? Not like in St. Louis where he almost had to come up.
With bodies on the bench, I mean, that's a tough sell. That's a tough sell in the clubhouse if you've got guys on the bench that you're paying to do a job.
Isn't it ultimately up to him? Like, if he goes out, like...
Well, I mean, Gibbons has to say, get the bat and get out there and actually hit. But I'll bet you he would... I think he'd do it in a heartbeat.
I can see it happening.
I think he'd
love the DH. Oh, Stroman would be all over it.
Right.
He loves this. He was. You should have seen him in BP the other day. He was swinging out of his shoes, second deck, and just loving it. Extra innings, for sure. I think it's an interesting weapon to have because he's shown he can handle the bat.
Well, last night he goes opposite field.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. I think it was an 0-2 count. In St. Louis, I mean, he ropes one to left, so he pulls a double into the corner. He's got that natural ability, natural talent. Clearly, and I've heard this, and I believe you've talked about it, like, he hangs around the cage. Like, he wants to be in there with Donaldson and Bautista and Pilar and others. He wants to get his hacks in. He wants to be at least capable of doing this if need be. I think it's more the injury concern that would probably lead the Jays to saying no dice. Because if you end up pinch hitting Marcus Stroman when you've got whoever else is sitting there on the bench, and he tries to run out a single and pulls his hamstring and goes on the DL. How do you possibly explain that in the American League?
Totally. I mean, you need him on the mound. You pay him to pitch. You pay him to get 6 or 7, 8 innings every night. But, I mean, so I can't see it if there's a guy on the bench. But in an extra inning game, and there's a lot of them over a course of 162 games, if he's not slated to pitch for another 3 or 4 days, I think it's a conversation now, at least.
Listen, I think it would be interesting this year if they're going to continue on this pace. They're going to end up with 75 wins. Hit them. Like, let them hit every once in a while to give me some sort of excitement.
Yeah.
Give me a reason to tune in the 7th inning of a blowout game because Stroman's going to step up.
The thing I wonder is just how that goes over in the clubhouse. And, I mean, maybe you can speak on this, but, I mean, if a guy's brought up, if there's two guys sitting on the bench and we're paid to do this, and Gibbons suddenly goes, Stro. I mean, how are those guys feeling?
Well, it's going to be all have to do with their production, what they're doing of late. I mean, if they're playing well, hitting well, and they're like, Stro, just for the show, you're like, okay, what is this? Mm-hmm. Is this a petting zoo or a baseball game? Like,
right. Well, and it's also, this is a sport that prides itself on sample size and long-term projections. The guys have...
Yeah.
Was it 4 at-bats or whatever?
Yeah. I mean,
like, how do you really know what this guy is?
It's a nice story for us, but, I mean, you just look at that swing last night, and he kind of ran into it. He said after the game he's never hit an Oppo home run in his life, even in BP. So, I mean, you got to take it all with a grain of salt.
He felt good about himself, and he should, man. That's a big moment for any pitcher hitting a bomb.
For sure. When you look at this guy, he's athletic. Mm-hmm. When you look at him on the mound,
he's an athlete.
I've never seen an athletic pitcher like that. Like, he looks like he'd go out and play second base right now. Can't say that for a lot of guys.
Bartolo Colon, case in point. Scott Mitchell in studio, TSN Jays reporter. So the DL just continues to just basically be overpacked. I mean, it's bloated. It's got to be the most bloated DL in the league or real close to it. But as a result, Anthony Alford is going to come up tonight, and he's one of their top 2 or 3 prospects. And he's going to be making his MLB debut. You're saying he's going to play in left field. You wrote about him recently. What can you tell us about Alford, and what should Jays fans expect out of his debut tonight?
Yeah, real interesting guy. Just the MLB draft is like no other draft out there. Guys don't go where they should based on numerous factors. Back in 2012, this guy was a potential first-round pick. 5-tool player, you hear it all the time, but he's got them. And he wanted to play football. So he goes to Southern Miss, plays a year of quarterback. He's drafted. The Blue Jays pay him overslot, $750K, and say, yeah, you can play baseball in the summer, football in this fall. Transfers to Old Miss, plays a year at DB there for them, like 5 or 6 first-round picks on that team. So, you know, legit program, and he had 6 tackles, I think. So this is a guy whose growth was really stunted by football. The 2-sport athletes, they just don't dedicate the same amount of time. So He's come along slowly, had a couple of injuries last year, but this spring has been the breakout everyone kind of saw back in 2012. Cut his strikeout rate pretty much in half, playing in Double A New Hampshire at this point. And they put him on the 40-man in November to protect him from the Rule 5 and kind of looked at him as a guy that could really break out this season, and that's exactly what he's done. So a little bit of a surprise he's up this early. But a big opportunity. Guy's 22, very good defensive outfielder, speed, power. He's the type of outfielder that you see coming up these days that teams want.
Well, injuries, I think, have forced their hand, right? I don't think ideally they wouldn't be bringing him up based on merit or based on progress necessarily. But when you have this many injuries and this many holes to fill in your lineup, at some point you've got to dig into AAA and AA, and that's what's happened here. But it's interesting because the past couple of years, there really has not been that much focus on the kids outside of which ones you might trade to try to bolster your lineup. Because for 20 years, we got to late August, and it was like, all right, when's this kid coming up to make this interesting? Because this team's going to win 82 games, and they're not playing for anything or whatever it might be. Past 2 years, we had a pretty good feeling they were going to the playoffs, so no one really cared about the farm system. Alford is the first guy who's really coming up who I think might have a future, but I would suggest and I would guess – probably a couple other kids down there that could get a taste at some point if this team continues on the pace that they're on.
Yeah, this is kind of maybe the first sign that at least they're looking at this as potentially a season where they could break some of these guys in. And yeah, this Anthony Alford wouldn't be up if this team was 100% healthy. Definitely Rowdy Tellez is a guy at AAA. The interesting part about Alford, he's coming up straight from AA, which is not unheard of, but it's rare for a guy with that few at-bats above AA. But, yeah, I mean, Rowdy Tellez is the next guy at AAA that guys are looking at, but he's kind of struggling at this point. So, but it's an interesting kind of moment just to kind of look, and you may start to see that transition that, hey, let's give some of these kids a shot rather than go sign some minor league free agent and plug them in for a week or two.
Jays in Baltimore this weekend, they're coming off a heated series against Atlanta. It may continue this weekend, right? Like, I mean, the history with these two teams, I could see it. I could see something going down.
Something.
What do you expect?
The Jays,
Scott,
have history with more teams than anybody in the league. This franchise is hated around baseball. There's no other way to put it, man.
I got no problem with that.
Texas Rangers, Baltimore Orioles, this year, Tampa Bay Rays, Atlanta Braves. Why are you fighting with the Atlanta Braves?
No kidding.
So, I don't know. Interests me, though.
Absolutely. I'm all for it, man. Go in there, pick a fight, win some games. Jays in Baltimore starting tonight. All right, Scott, good seeing you, man. Thanks for popping in studio.
Thanks for having me.
All right, there's Scott Mitchell, our TSN Jays reporter. I think we're going to catch up with Noodles, get an update. He might be on, like, Demerol or morphine. It could actually be really interesting.
Five?
Yeah, around 5:10, I think. So we'll see what Noodles is up to. Carlo Koliakova is going to be back in studio, your boy.
Stoops.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. In the 6 p.m. hour, future headlines at 6:30.
I got to talk to Carlo. I got to ask him something.
Mm-hmm.
I committed to hiking this weekend.
Why would he be the guy to ask?
Because I want to ask him if there's any kind of injury that I could tell to get out of the hiking.
All right.
He would know.
He might. He's got a long history. Injuries, that's kind of his forte to an extent. So we'll get Carlo in here around 6 p.m. Hour two up next. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.
And now it's time for the 40-30 low center of gravity grit player of the game.
I'm a professional grinder.
We do have a little grit and grind when we reach in our pants and pull it out.
Grit grinder, looking back on last night.
My grit grinder is Mike Babcock. I think he was seen at the game in Nashville, grinding it out, looking at talent.
He was there, and Lou Lamoriello was there, too.
Uh-huh. There's a couple decors they're probably looking at saying, need him.
Everyone's trying to figure out which guy will be available in Anaheim, but at this point, nobody knows. I mean, you don't want Bieksa. You're not going to get Montour. You're not going to get Theodore because they don't have to protect those two. Craig was in here yesterday
saying,
think
of the D-man that Nashville's pumping out, though. Keep in mind that Seth Jones is gone,
mm-hmm.
Ryan Suter's gone, and Shea Weber's gone.
Right. Exactly. They are a defenseman factory. Like, that's what it's they do. Factory. They knock out factory-type defensemen that are outstanding.
That's why I hate the salary cap, man. Like, can you imagine the powerhouse that Nashville would be?
I'm with you. A lot of teams. Chicago. Think about what Chicago could do. Chicago could have won 3-4 cups in a row.
Yeah.
I'll go with Marcus Stroman and Corey Perry. I've been tough on Corey Perry. He had a big night last night. Ends up with the OT winner.
Yeah.
Corey Perry with a shout-out. Noodles will join us. Carlo Colaiacovo coming up in studio. Future headlines. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.